Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 182. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brady Noski.
And I'm Awesome Rouse. And this week on The Inner Gamer,
Hang on, I'm here. Sorry, I'm late.
Who's this guy?
What? It's me, Devin. I'm here to do a podcast with you guys today.
I'm really excited about this.
Holy shit.
Let's dive into it. Today we play Mowin' and Throwin', Octopath Traveler, Lightfall. We'll move into the news where we talk about Ninja becoming the first Twitch streamer to ever reach 10 million followers. Then a 7-year-old is making a video game and putting it on Steam. So that's awesome and much, much more. And then for our discussion topic today, hey, let's talk about game devs taking risks or going back to basics. The kumsi kumsa between the two, the yin and the yang.
The Wang.
After all this time, you still can't banter. I get it. That's all right. Can you cue the music though?
Yes, I can turn it on and off. It is August 7th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we would love for you to support us on Patreon. For as little as $12 a year. That is right. $12 a year. That's like less than like if you bought a whole meal at Panera Bread Company. So it's expensive.
If you saved up all year long to get one Grubhub meal sent to you.
Yes.
Or Uber Eats.
Or Favor.
Or DoorDash.
There's too many lazy
people food services.
so many things. So yeah, you can make this podcast better. And
do
we'll
we just promote all of those services?
Apparently, you're not going to get any kind of like a nod back to them. Like, yeah, okay, we'll sponsor you. No, they're like, yeah, free advertising. All right.
No, seriously.
All right.
So yeah, you can get some goodies along the way and you will be helping us make this podcast better. And we would adore you forever, so you should totally do that because it's awesome. Anyway, let's jump into some games that we played. So we're going to talk about three games in this episode here. First one is going to be a game from a Dallas-based developer called House Pixel Games. We just met them at the Let's Play Expo last week, and this game is called Mowin' and Throwin', and you play as garden gnomes and you cut grass, and it's 2v2 couch competitive party gaming. And it is amazing, and I absolutely love this game.
When you first were like telling me about this game, because like when you,
anytime, what was that picture in your head?
Yeah, anytime you're first like pitching a game to somebody, like Brett should never be the guy to give the elevator pitch. Let's just go ahead and throw that out there first off. But in reality, like,
can I derail this for a second? What's his best elevator pitch that you've heard?
None. I don't think I've heard one that just has like stuck in my mind. That's how terrible they all are. They've all just blended into one long elevator pitch.
Where he does them. I just don't know what they are.
I hit the emergency stop button and I climb out the roof. Anywho, no, like when you think about the like an elevator pitch for a game like Mowin' and Throwin', you're talking about doing a literal menial chore of mowing the lawn. But then you start like throwing in the very unique elements to
literally
this.
Throwing in. Yes, continue.
I want to break that bottle over
your head.
Was
that a pun you were going for?
It was a stupid, very stupid.
You weren't going for that pun?
I was not.
Oh, okay.
When you throw in the unique elements of things like it's multiple people and there's one riding lawnmower and then there's the competitive multiplayer stuff that you throw in there, like throwing over manure or rocks.
Fertilizer. That's from Octopath Traveler.
We'll get into that later.
Yeah.
When you throw in over the fertilizer to make grass grow. Yeah.
Yes.
It sounds a bit hectic, but then when you actually look at the art style and you look at the literal garden gnomes, which were adorable, by the way.
Yeah, the voices were great.
Yes. Like, I immediately saw that. I was like, that is a drinking party game if I have ever seen one.
Exactly.
It is.
And not even a drinking party game. I know that's where my mind went, but that's because I'm a borderline alcoholic. But that game, just in general, for like a group setting of any kind, whether it's family and friends, just a family playing games together, or a group setting with lots of other people sitting around, like That's awesome, man.
Family who becomes enemies.
Friends who become enemies. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. No, there's lots of
It's so good.
It's addicting. And we had our event. I don't know if you mentioned that in the pre-show, but
no,
it was like I did not want to get off of it. I was like, let's go again.
There's a lot of people.
Two out of three.
They were having a blast with it. Yeah.
Five out of seven.
It was a good time. We
or what is that? When do you go up to five out of
numbers and things?
Yeah, I don't know.
But I like all the fact that you can, because you get the rocks, you can throw rocks over at the lawnmower and that'll like stun them for a little bit so they can't move the lawnmower anymore. Or if you just throw it on the ground, then it like breaks a rock on the ground. So then they have to dig up that rock before they can continue onward down that path. And so it's a constant back and forth. It's like a tug of war of who's going to get stuff done faster. And there was a part where I was almost like I was on a team and we were about to finish mowing the lawn. We had one little sliver left and I was running over to get to it. Somebody threw like a fertilizer thing over it and my partner didn't get to it in time. So then it created more grass. And all of a sudden the other time, like it completely shifted. We had so little grass left and they just went over and they just like pulverized. Like they got like a bunch of gas all of a sudden and just won the game. I was like, damn it. But it was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
It was, it's one of those, it's the novelty is in its ridiculousness, but also in the fact of just how quickly a game can be played and how much fun you can have while doing that, that kind of white knuckle gaming from mowing the lawn.
Yeah. And they have eight levels. So the first level is just a plain Jane level. And then after that, they start introducing new environmental changes to the level that like one of them is dark, so you have lights on your person and or your lawnmower and you can see what's around you, but you can't see like if a box drops from the sky unless there's enough light around illuminating it. You don't know what it is, so you go over there and you're like, oh, please be gas, and you get there and it's like a rock and you're like, damn it, I need gas right now. And then you have like, you know, barriers that get in the way. So then you have to like move around those barriers as you're cutting the lawn in this dark field. And there's other ones that have like platforms that like raise and lower. So you have to like wait for the platform to come down so you can get your mower up there with a higher level to mow. And it's just like crazy complicated, heavy duty dig. It's so good. The developers behind it are amazing. They're super cool people.
They're local, right?
They are local. They're in Dallas. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So the first time we found out about them was their producer, Mark, shout out to Mark, came out to our event in Dallas.
Shout out, Mark.
He was like, hey, I just want to meet you guys and show you about my game and everything. And we checked it out. And we're like, this looks pretty cool. And we didn't have it at the time, but then we had it for the next event. We're like,
oh, man.
Yes.
So much fun.
Yes. Yes.
I want it to be a staple. It needs to be on the Switch so we can have it all the time without a PC, which I'm sure it's coming to the Switch anytime now. I will say, hopefully. I'm not a huge fan of the graphics, but the gameplay is so fun.
Yeah.
I just throw it out the window.
So good.
Yeah, like what can you expect from a game called Mowing and Throwing? I don't need to see like.
No, I mean, I don't
need to see some 4K resolution Skyrim grass.
I mean, I'm not looking for that. I'm not looking for that. I wish there was more lighting in it.
Lighting things.
Yeah, it just seems really flat lighting wise. But I mean,
solid colors across the board.
Yeah,
yeah.
The gameplay is just so fucking fun. It doesn't even matter.
So good. I love it. I think it's great. Dig, definitely. So that's my vote for that. Anyway, let's move on to the next thing. Octopath Traveler. This is the one that we've talked a lot about Octopath Traveler, but we haven't like gone super in depth, I don't think, into it.
There's
this thing here. I don't know what this thing is. It's just this like box that's just here. Oh wait, that's a collector's edition. That this guy has collected. Mr. Devin here.
Devin, do you like this game or something?
What?
Is this so?
Is that too much to assume?
Is it? Tell me how much you hate this game.
How much I hate this game? I hate that it's taken up
all my life.
It has approximately sunk 56 hours of.
Really?
How many characters you got?
And you haven't unlocked all the characters yet?
How many characters you have?
56. Oh my gosh. That blows my mind.
How many characters? Do you want to tell us or no?
I have four characters.
There's that much to do in that game?
I do a lot of grinding.
There is a lot of grinding.
So what level are they?
High enough.
Look,
we don't need to get into that, okay? Let's get into the game.
Okay, so
the game itself.
We'll get back into this later. I'm getting into my playthrough,
okay.
And I will tell you.
We've given our thoughts about this game. Tell me your thoughts about why this game is special to you.
Octopath Traveler is a game from Square Enix where it is returning back to the old JRPG style of turn-based combat and very intricate stories to be told in organically in the game. The thing that I am loving about this game is almost innumerable. The aesthetics themselves, the characters, the gameplay, the leveling system, the combat, the towns and all the very uniqueness of how each one feels so well realized and lived in. There's so much I can say that's great about this game. So I'm going to hit some of just the high points that I've written here. The combat is first and foremost for me, because with any of these Square Enix games or any Final Fantasy game, any kind of turn-based RPG, combat's key, because if you're bored in combat, you're going to be bored through a lot of it.
Yeah.
That is never the case with Octopath Traveler. It is by far one of the most unique combat experiences I have had in a turn-based strategy or a turn-based RPG ever. There's so many layers to it that provides such a cool experience. I mean, just starting off when you first kick off the game, you've got your one character, so it's just you versus whatever enemies are there. And then you have that same sort of rock, paper, scissors mentality of weaknesses. So the enemies all have weaknesses. Well, you know, in the old school RPGs, well, hell, any RPG, every enemy has like one weakness. Yeah. If you look at like, you know, ice monsters, use fire. Oh, you have this sort of like water monster, use lightning.
Yeah.
Whatever. Octopath Traveler has completely morphed that into something more with using all different kinds of weaknesses. So a flying character can be weak to arrows and fire.
Right.
And, well, what does the weakness do? Well, the weakness will break down their guard, and they have a certain number of guards that they have. Most of, like, your low-level enemies is one guard, and your tougher, like, bosses are, like, six.
Freaking sometimes. Six,
I've got
man.
To 11.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Same. Yeah. Some,
shit, that's they, well, they start at, like, me. Six, but then they build
yeah,
it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, oh, it's oh, crazy. Because the thing yeah, is, like, yeah. you know, you think of, like, your low-level mob, it's, like, one, two. You may get a tough one, that's three. Then you get into, like the first level, like bosses, and they're like, you know, they're six, and it gets a little higher than that. And then I didn't want to like terrify you, but yes, it gets up to.
Oh no, let's get into it, man.
It gets high.
I mean, I played eight before, but that's about the most I've encountered.
Dude,
But yeah, it's like I like when they throw in different twists. Like you think you're about to kill the guy, like they're weak, and you can like beat him red and all that stuff. And you're like, okay, I almost got this done. And they throw in like some other thing that's just like, where the hell did this come from? Now I gotta break three more guards plus this, and I'm like, what the hell?
Oh, he spent his turn buffing himself? That's not good.
Oh, I know. Yeah, when they like this character has increased his strength, I'm like, fuck that.
Yeah. So the combat really has changed from the old style turn based to something completely new. And as you add more characters into it, it just becomes an even more intricate. It's like a five-way person rock, paper, scissors game. And then you have the BP system, which I think is absolutely brilliant. Like,
no, I love it. I love it so much.
When you have to think of a strategy of not just how many players you have, what turn they're on, how many bosses are left, how many guards they have left. You also now factor in how many BPs does each character have. That is a strategist's wet dream.
So let me... But I mind you don't mind me interjecting the story here. So yeah. I was fighting Tessa's chapter two boss.
Okay.
And I battled him twice, got creamed.
Yep.
And finally the third time I beat him. But it was interesting because every time I played him, my strategy would change a little bit. Mm-hmm. And watching like, so he has two guards and I was like, all right, I'm going to focus on these little minions. Get them out of the way.
Get the minions out of the way first. It was like a usual,
because they got
a usual thought that people have when you're facing like boss characters.
Right.
Get rid of the minions first.
Right. They had this level lash that like was taking down my characters.
Yeah.
Mind you, Ulbricht was my highest level character at the time. coming in second with Cyrus and Ophelia, which are like level 18, 19.
Yeah.
But everyone else was like 15 to 17. Right. Like not high at all. Actually, no, they weren't even 17. 15 to 16. That's it. So obviously Tessa was like 15 and she was just getting knocked all the time. So it became this like this dance of like taking down the boss's guard.
Mm-hmm.
Using that time where he isn't able to do anything mm-hmm. to res who I needed to res, mm-hmm. heal them up, prepare them for the next, breaking them down. And I would just, I couldn't do really high level attacks because I had to use my BP points to knock down his guard mm-hmm. with the weapons that they had. And yeah. it was just like, oh, this is taking, it literally,
yeah, it's a
total. It took me 5 hours over 2 days yeah. to kill this guy.
Yeah. It's a juggling act. It's yeah. a juggling act when it you is, think about the bosses that you're up against, like break down guard, maintain health, make sure SPs are still good, make sure, oh God, someone died.
Use items, yeah.
Throw an olive of life in there. Oh God. Oh no. Oh, I'm dead.
Use yes. the Aspiring Plum to
it's
get your SP
so
back.
So good.
Yeah.
It's so good. I
very clever.
No, the combat alone was worth it. I do love the characters. I love all the characters that I've encountered so far. I love their stories. I love what the that each one of them, you can go back when you get new characters introduced. You can, they will ask you, hey, do you want to start from the beginning with them? And so that you can see what their story was leading up to it. And I suggest that because each character has a very unique story. Not all of them are super epic and amazing.
I forgot that was optional, that you could, yeah. you didn't have to. Yeah, I
don't
feel
have
like that's
to.
Part of the experience.
You don't
like
have
you need to.
It is part of it because each character has roughly, I would
that.
Say, roughly 1 hour worth of introduction.
Yeah, great.
And again, some of them amazing. They have like really cool stories of like political subterfuge and betrayal and,
right.
and oh God, what's
you,
happening with.
Do you have Alfin yet?
No, not yet.
Oh God, I hate his story. Fucking hate his story.
Tressa for me was the one that yeah. I'm just kind
of
like.
Both of them are not that great.
She's a traitor, so she's like, I want to see the world and be the most world famous shopkeep ever.
And I'm so good.
Girl.
She's so happy.
Your best dream aspirations is working retail. Get some perspective.
Yeah, right. right. Alfin's no better. He's like, I'm going to be the best apothecary ever. Travel the world.
I've heard bad things about you.
Like,
but all that being said, they are still very good. And the more you play them, the more you do get to learn about them. The game is not perfect. No game ever is. But my complaints are very few and far between. I will say the world map, while very large and expansive, is a bit linear. Like there's not exactly the exploration that I was anticipating or wanting, but that's okay.
That's one of my pros, obviously.
He doesn't like exploring.
I know.
No, I just like
open
that.
Open world.
It's like, oh, there's a pathway down here. I know that it's going to take me like 5 steps to get to the chest, and I can get back on my linear path. I'm really happy about that. It's great. It's great. It's not Skyrim.
That is good for Fred.
It's not bad. And it's not exactly what I would call a complaint. It's just something that I wouldn't expect from a JRPG of a big open world yeah. and one that presents itself as a giant expansive world full of exploration.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know if this is a critique or a bad thing or not, but in most JRPGs, there is some sort of great big threat that is imposing itself upon the world as a whole. Yes, you have all the characters and their stories, but there is also like, oh, there's a meteorite being summoned from the skies from a devil that's supposed to destroy humanity as we know it. And
yeah, is that existing?
No.
There's
no,
nothing
it doesn't.
In there.
No.
It's just like the individualized
story. It is
stories.
All about the 8 individuals and their stories.
And it's funny. I'm really okay with that. I was hoping for something bigger overall.
And I think that was my problem, was walking in thinking there's going to be some
right, like great, where's giant, this overarching story?
Where's the big story at? And there wasn't one. And that's fine because I don't necessarily think this game needs one.
Right.
I think that in this case, you know, exploring these octopath travelers, that's the story in itself. And I can see other titles coming from this in the future where we do get one. But I think that this is a great, great proof of concept.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That we have for this game.
So, question, because I haven't gone as far into it as you all have. When you start, as the character you start with, the first story path you take is always going to be your primary character, right?
Yeah. You can't. Yeah.
You can't change that.
Yeah, you can't change that until you finish that person's
story.
Story, yeah.
Okay, so when you're traveling around, and like you said, you can skip the what's happened to them. But that's the
intro for every, yeah.
Okay.
Because like every character has their prologue, right. And you don't necessarily do a whole lot in those prologues. It's a lot of exposition. It's a lot of exposition, a lot of like you walking around in the starting area. You may have a one or two little bits of combat, but nothing crazy. And then you get back to the main story with the main characters, and it's like, okay, now we're all together, we're a party, and we continue the story.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was thinking it was set up like. But I think this is a good, like, Square Enix, they said this is a test. Like, this was like, is this going to work on the Switch for us? Is this what we want to do? And then clearly they sold out everywhere. So they're like freaking out. So they're
speaking of selling out, GameStop earned a big red X against me for selling my limited collector's edition copy.
Oh, you had it reserved and they sold it?
What did they tell you?
Those dicks.
Sorry.
Wow.
I got my refund, so that was fine. But I was literally scrambling. I called every retailer in the DFW area to try to find it. One place had it, and I drove an hour to go get it. I don't give a shit.
I would have told GameStop. I would have been like, look, give me my money back and then buy me the next one.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, you're going to pay for this.
Well, apparently it was somebody who was new who didn't realize that it was on hold and let it go to
them. They probably just took it themselves. They were like, I want this myself.
I bought it.
I don't blame people for wanting it, but when like I felt secure in my fact that like I was like, okay, I've got mine reserved. But then I started seeing these stories of how it was selling out everywhere and people were like, yeah, we can't get a copy.
That's kind of mind-blowing.
Oh, shit.
That's kind of mind-blowing. I saw the storm coming. I just didn't know that they weren't ready for it.
Did you buy yours digitally, too?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I was going to get the collector's edition, but I thought it was just the box with one little thing that opens up, and it wasn't.
This was worth every penny.
Yeah, it wasn't what I expected.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
It was better.
So, I think it's pretty apparent, it's a dig.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I want to talk about the paths that you can take with this.
Yeah.
So I started with Albrecht, and I went around and got all the characters, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been having to juggle levels with everybody, but I was listening to the IGN review, and their guy took Theron, and he took him all the way through his chapters, and is now going back and getting the other characters one by one. I'm like, that's interesting. I didn't realize like the different ways you can do this.
Yeah.
Like I just figured that you're like you get all the characters and then use that as a group, but then you just got four now.
Well, and that's the thing that I'm finding interesting is you don't have to go get all eight characters for a playthrough. Like you can be like, "Oh my god, I just you can get just these three characters and go through it if you want, or you can, as this guy did, go through and do just this main story quest with this one person, then go get other characters. The game is very open in how it lets you play and how receptive it is to your work being put in for, you know, character stories, level progression, whichever.
Yeah.
And when you do get new people, it's fairly easy to power level them, you know, keep them healed. And
do you think there's like a benefit to maybe getting a character at a higher level so that when you acquire the new characters, do they power level faster?
Dude, it's so easy to power level. It's so easy to power level.
Yeah, because literally, just like when I got my first character, it was like super fast, like moving up.
My new
ranks.
Characters now, like I will get them, and then I'll fast travel to a spot where I know I can easily walk to a high level area.
Yeah, just
two or three battles. Jump up six levels. Okay.
Done.
It's nice.
That's cool.
It's an amazing game. I highly suggest for anybody who either does like JRPGs or wants to try out a good JRPG. This one is easy to play. It's easy to follow and it's a ton of fun.
Coming from a guy who's never played a JRPG, like in any capacity, really other than Kingdom Hearts, this is a pretty awesome JRPG.
Yeah. Same here. I don't play these. I like it.
I like it. So let's jump into real quick. Devin, you've been playing Lightfall.
I have.
We talked about it on the podcast once, but I didn't play a lot of it. But you've played a lot more, it sounds like. As in like you finished it, basically, right?
Yeah.
And then now you're like doing collectors and stuff like that. So why, like what is it about this game that you really find unique or special?
I liked the heart that went into this. To the narrative and the story being told.
Okay.
Because the whole thing being narrated by the Wizened Owl character,
right,
really spoke to me. I enjoyed the fact that I could be platforming and I could be just subtly listening to this narrative in the background. I could be receiving the story. And it wasn't like it was hard either. There is a lot of reading to be done with some of the story because as you find the collectibles, the little amber jewels that you find throughout the levels, when you collect them, there's a spot where you start reading and it's like a journal entry and it's lengthy. It's lengthy.
Is that back at that room that you go into where there's like all the circles that you can spin around?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah. So my thing was, and this is just like a nitpicky thing about being on the Switch, but like, again, I always play handheld and that text is freaking impossible to read on handheld.
Correct. So that was actually one of the things that I did have a complaint about when I had it was, yes, if you do have it on the Switch, I do suggest play Lightfall on the TV just because the text is tiny and difficult to read when you are collecting. If that's what you're into, if you're into the collector, collecting all the little subtle stuff in the Easter eggs and wanting to get the full story, you can do so. It's just, whoo, that is a strain on the eyes.
It's something else.
But that aside, the actual game itself, like what you can do with this, the boy and the platforming that's done and how you create the cube and you can use it for attacks or wall jumps or move it around a level and create new platforms. It's a very fun game. We played it at PAX.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It was at PAX, right?
Yeah. Okay. PAX.
We tested it out at PAX. What was it from? Dimbold Games?
No, that's another.
No.
Man. I just looked at it the other day and I forgot already. That's my bad.
I remember it was Ben is the guy that we talked to.
Yeah.
But but
shout out to Ben again. Cause Ben, dude, you guys made a hell of a game.
Bishop Games.
Okay. Bishop Games. Just really cool guys. We're really trying to, as they said when we were talking to them, they were trying to create a very unique, different kind of platformer because, you know, with Lightfall and most other platformers or video games or anything like that, light is usually a good thing and you want to go towards light. And they said we wanted to do the opposite of that. We wanted to, like, have this darkened character jumping through these light infused levels, and man, just getting creative with how you use these very limited controls is so damn fun. It's so good.
Yeah, I do enjoy it. I enjoy it quite a bit. So awesome. So Dig for you.
Dig.
I think I called it a dig as well when I was talking about it. So it's a good game.
Oh, no,
I definitely recommend it.
Have you done some of that high level shit where you're just like just flying through the level? I've seen some of that. I saw it on the trailer and I was like, holy shit, you can do that? Oh, no. I think most games are made for speed.
Well, because when you have four or five uses of the cube and you're running and you do a jump and you right before you land, you hit the button to create the cubes so you can do another jump, but then you have to hit it again at a different button so you're doing wall jumps up and then onto another platform. Like, it's very Celeste in that regard. Yes. Celeste.
I dig it.
So
I dig it.
I love these challenging platformers, man. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. I apparently just don't like easy games.
No, you like Dark Souls.
I do.
Yeah, that's about right.
I saw you playing that the other day. PlayStation
Dark 4. Souls Remastered, of course.
No, Dark Souls 3.
And Dark Souls 3.
Dang.
How many times do you think you played Dark Souls 1?
All of them. What's the most you've played any of them?
Yeah.
The most time sunk into a Dark Souls game was Dark Souls 2, but that was because that had the most DLC.
Hmm.
And I played that one with a number of my friends together. The one I probably sunk in just most personal time into was probably Dark Souls 1 because I started doing different playthroughs of different classes that I made. And then I'd say probably my most fun playthrough was Dark Souls 3.
Got it.
God.
It's awesome.
I'm exhausted thinking about it.
Heck yeah. All right.
I want to do more playthroughs. I started up God of War again to get through that.
Yeah.
But I haven't touched it for 2-3 weeks now because all these other games come out and I want to play them. And I'm so sucked in Octopath Traveler, but I'm like, this game is so good.
Yeah.
And I was playing it. I was enjoying it. But it's I can't find time to get through it.
Welcome to my world.
I don't want to say anything on God of War just because it is such an absolute treasure, and I want people to experience that game in its most raw form without my influence. So I will just simply say that God of War is a dig. You need to get it. You need to play it. You need to experience it. And it's Vikings, so it's my people.
Raw dog.
Raw dog.
And that is going to wrap it up for the games that we played this week. So everybody, we're going to take a quick break and stay tuned for our video game news.
From around the world.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our video game news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. First up, we have Ninja, the popular Twitch streamer who streams a lot of Fortnite right now, is the first streamer to reach 10 million followers.
That's absolutely bananas.
10 million people.
10 million. 10 million people. I can watch this man.
This boy. Stream. No, he's a man. He's like 20
he's
something.
He's
20 something. He's
a
something.
Man.
I don't know how old he is. How old
you're
is Twitch?
You're a man.
But if you're a gamer, aren't you just a boy?
No.
Depending on who you ask, I guess.
So the stereotypes. The next person behind him is actually two streamers, which are actually the same person. Meclips, which was Shroud's former name, and then Shroud, which is his actual name now. So apparently Meclips. He's got still has a huge following from his old name.
Interesting.
And so that's just shy of 4 million followers. So Ninja is by far. I wonder how much of this, like how much of a jump he had when he streamed with Drake. Like what did that do to his
what was the
account?
Bump in social media?
Yeah, because Drake has like 20,000 billion trillion people that follow him. I don't know what it actually is, but it's like high.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's in the trillions.
Yeah, totally. That's like our debt ceiling in America.
There's only 6.5 billion people on the planet, Brent.
There could be many ghost bot accounts that just like were formed. I mean, you don't know what Russia's doing over there. Like,
that's what Russia's next motive is to not it's not U.S. elections. It's Twitch followers.
It's Twitch followers. Ah. Yeah. Make Ninja the biggest streamer in the world.
Man, conspiracy.
Anyway,
Illuminati confirmed.
We're blowing it wide open. Well, good for him.
Yeah. So the next story we have is a game called Gloomhaven, which I was very shocked to know that this? You have not played this
I,
game or
not,
heard of this
I've
game.
I've not played Gloomhaven.
So
do
Gloomhaven,
you play a lot more board games? I mean,
I have heard Gloomhaven.
Well, so here's why. Because Gloomhaven is one of the best board games around, supposedly. And it's a top
one of the highest rated.
It's a top rated board game on Board Game Geek.
Yeah.
What is that? It's
big time. What is it? It's a website about
board
games.
What's going on here?
It's a massive ass box. Yeah. And inside that massive ass box is a bunch of stuff, including like miniatures and things like that.
Like any board game, it's massive. It's intricate. Lots of details. The longevity of the play is just astronomical. And it's got a very, very strong following of people who seem to enjoy it. I personally have never played it myself.
Because...
To be perfectly honest, it just doesn't strike me as the one that I would enjoy. I really do tend to really like some of the novelty board games. Zombicide, Twilight Imperium, any like Mansions of Madness.
Kind of nerd, are you?
A big one.
One that plays lots of board games.
Ones that plays lots of board games.
Not the best one.
Yeah,
not the best one. You can call me a hipster in that regard, I guess. Like, I don't go for the popular ones.
Damn. So anyway, so developer Asmodee Digital, I don't know if I pronounced that right. I probably totally butchered it, but that's okay. They're going to be making an actual adaptation of this game, and they're working directly with the creator Isaac Childress as part of that. So it'll be a dungeon crawling roguelike that will capture the experience and appeal of the board game. It'll initially be only single player, but they're eventually going to replicate Gloomhaven's random dungeon mode down the line.
Very
so
cool. Okay.
That's going to be pretty exciting.
Nice.
Now we can all play it.
And eventually they want to put out the whole campaign in there and everything. It's going to launch in Steam Early Access first and foremost. Gloomhaven is becoming a video game. So
I've heard some comments of how people don't like the Warhammer universe and how it's gone, how it's been like digitally.
It's gotten bananas.
And it's just like,
the Warhammer universe, the Warhammer universe has gotten bananas.
Yeah.
Like,
it is
regard,
pretty crazy.
I'm referring to the Warhammer 40K because for a long time they were saying that they were not going to write any more canon story in regards to...
And then Sigmar came out or whatever. Oh, wait, no, that was the other one. Yeah,
and that's a now, yeah, now medieval. Stuff now stuff is happening, but that's neither here nor there. That's a lot of...
Well, I just heard that people are like, why are you making it all digital? It's a board game, or yep. like it's a tabletop game.
Yeah.
You're like ruining the genre, or like the,
you know,
that whole,
it's kind of like people who hated the Solo movie, like, why are you making this movie? No one asked for this. It's to fucking entertain you. Shut up. If you don't want to play it, don't buy it.
Another movie I haven't seen yet.
You, but you've seen all the Star Wars movies, man.
I know, it's really sad. That's the one I haven't gone to see yet.
Damn. Well, at least it's one. It's not all.
I've the only movies I've seen in theaters in the last 2.5 years has been Star Wars. That's it. Nothing else.
I'll accept that answer.
That's pretty cool, right? Yeah, pretty good. Anyway, yeah, it's one. So speaking of cool things, Tesla, my favorite car maker in the entire world,
yeah.
is about to release an update on their Tesla cars that will feature playable Atari games on the screen in the cars. So they're going to release
that
it.
That won't cause any wrecks.
No, yeah, of course not. So version 9.0 is coming out in 4 weeks, and there will be Easter eggs in there with some of Atari's games, such as Tempest, Pole Position, and Missile Command. And Pole Position, when the car is in stationary position, the actual physical steering wheel is your wheel for the game. So you can
get the fuck out of here. You can, are you serious?
You can sit in your car stationary, like parked.
How
at, like,
stupid are you going to look, though? How
wait,
stupid are you going to look
sitting in, a parking
in the
lot.
Middle of a parking lot? Someone drives, pulls up next to you, like in a parking lot somewhere, and you're like,
hey.
How soon will you have to get new tires after that? I'll just say.
Oh, no, it's fine. It'll be good. It's only stationary, so you're not moving. You're not moving anything. It's great. So,
but don't your tires move with your steering wheel?
Oh no, this won't move. This is just wheels.
So they're going to disengage the power steering.
Yeah, but
that's okay.
Yeah.
As long as that
it's
happens,
it's
fine.
It's all electronic.
Because that's not going to cost thousands, hundreds of dollars.
No, it'll be good. It'll be great.
Or hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It's a good way to get your child to learn how to drive a car. You put them in your Tesla and just say, "Here, don't move.
Don't go anywhere.
Hold on tight.
Just stay here. Don't hit the start button."
Yep. Just drive full position.
Like a bad idea.
It's super
go
weird.
On.
I don't understand. I mean, that's about it. They're just bringing out games. They're Easter eggs, and it's going to be fun and silly. And that's that. I mean, just Tesla's crazy. I mean, they brought out a freaking flamethrower last year for the Boring Company to make money, which may end up in Borderlands at some point.
Oh.
So, and then they released a surfboard a couple weeks ago. And we're like, hey, here's a surfboard out there. It's like $1,500. Buy it, and it's sold out like in a heartbeat. And like anything that Elon Musk puts his name on is going to, like, people are going to buy it and jump into it. Like, this is nuts. What's wrong with people? I don't know. I love Tesla, though. They made me a bunch of money on Friday, and I was really happy about that.
Good for them.
Their stock went up $50. I was really excited. It's great.
Do you own stock?
I do own stock.
Do you really?
Yeah. I bought Tesla at like $2.75.
One stock?
It's at $3.50. No, three. I got three shares. I'm doing really good.
Are they voting shares?
No. Oh. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how that works. I don't know enough about the stock market, okay? I just do what I can.
Let's get to the next article. This is really amazing.
Sea of Thieves, the game that has taken us all by surprise with its amazing awesomeness that none of my friends will play with me. It's really sad. Oh. Anyway.
Wait, are we skipping one?
No. Am
yeah.
I? Did
yeah,
I skip
you
one?
Did. You did.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, let's do this one, and then I'll jump back to the other one. All right. So Sea of Thieves is under siege in the new expansion, The Cursed Sails. So in The Cursed Sails, this is going to come out. This is out already, actually.
Yeah.
And it's free for
all
players.
They lied to me. They said September.
Oh, yeah. Now you got ruined. That's probably when the August. Next one comes out. September, maybe. I don't know.
Because
there's a third one coming out. So it's going to have a limited time campaign with tools and mechanics that will forever change the world of Sea of Thieves. Skeleton ships are coming on the rise, along with the cursed ammunition that tears through holes but also dishes out serious gameplay effects like dropping an anchor or intoxicating the crew, which is kind of cool. So you can just like shoot out bullets and just like intoxicate everybody. Then they have a brigantine, which is a new 3-crew ship, and ships can now join together in alliances to formalize peace treaties and share loot, which I think is a very welcome addition because there's less incentive for you to just like find somebody and like kill them.
Right.
You can actually like team up and work together. A bunch of new cosmetics, more player customization, new stories about the merchants who run the outposts and all that good stuff. And, and it's going to keep evolving. They're going to keep adding more and more events. And more things. And what was the thing that you said not too long ago about this expansion that was like, I want to jump into it because of this? What was that?
Oh, it's because I mean, I don't remember, but maybe because the Skellies are now have their own ships.
Yeah.
And you can run around. Like, it actually provides gameplay. Instead of just sailing the seas and be like, all right, 3 hours later, we're at our destination. Okay.
Yep.
You haven't played it yet, have you?
No.
Are you going to get it eventually?
You should, no. Man.
Okay.
It'd be awesome.
Your friends play it?
I'm good. No.
Minus us?
No. Minus you two. I know of no one else who plays this game.
Charlie played it for a little bit. Yeah. But then I think everybody dropped out. It's really sad, though, because it's such a cool... It's a cool idea, and I really appreciate it.
It should have been free to play, and then you pay for the DLC later.
I mean, I agree with that. Yeah, it should have been like a Fortnite model that makes millions of dollars a day, which is dumb and drives me nuts. And I want to be Epic Games and like have their bank account so I can just use that money for whatever I want.
I just want the Battle Royale craze to go away already. Let's move on to the next story.
Okay, next story is we have a child, a seven-year-old child, who releases her first Steam game inspired by her game developer father. This is a girl named Penny who brought out the game Answer the Question with a unanimously positive set of reviews, which is pretty awesome. And
7 years old.
Yeah, 7 years old. So she's been playing games since she was a toddler. Intrigued by the progress of her dad, Lance McDonald, she was like, can I make a game one day? And that quickly became today. And he had a nearby desk with a Windows 98 PC with a quick beginner's guide for QBasic on it. And Lance gave her a book to help her make sense of it all. Before long, she was working on her first game. And now she has made Answer the Question, which supplies players with an infinite cascade of math questions, which they receive points for answering correctly. She tried to make an action game, quote, but she wasn't ready. So she made a different game. So this is her first game.
That's 200% adorable.
Exactly. This is amazing. This is just amazing.
I'm really, really inspired to hear about that. Like 7 years old, she wants to do her own thing. Gave her own little coding book. Like that's awesome.
Well, we were just talking about how the barrier of entry last podcast was like super low now. Like, yeah. This is like way low, which is good. Like that is a good thing. That is. Oh,
hold on,
man.
Let me see. What was I doing at seven?
Yeah. Beating up people in the streets.
Nope, I think I was shitting my pants. Okay. No, I'm kidding.
Probably playing video games.
Sorry. I was probably playing video games. Probably playing a lot of video games.
Logo that
answer
she drew.
The question that you got to include that, I guess, in the show notes.
Just go
look at Kotaku on Steam.
Kotaku and look up the game dev dad 7 year old, and you'll find it. And it's awesome.
That's so cool.
I love it. The world of video games, y'all. It's great. So there is a movie theater that on August 12th will be screening a certain thing at the Rio Cinema in London. Loading Bars will be screening at a movie theater the game PT for all to come and watch in a theater together with all the different variables and ways and pathways you can go through. Can you imagine? So there's like an entry fee, £5 entry fee because it's in Europe. And that's going to be for a drink ticket. So they're not paying for it. They're just paying for you to give you a drink to come in and watch a free showing of PT. So that's how they're kind of getting around like Konami, like come and shut them down. But ultimately, like you can go to the movie theater and watch like PT experience in the theaters and the popcorn and all that fun stuff. I would assume it's like what? A 40-minute experience? Like it wasn't that long.
I would say 40 is generous.
Yeah.
I would say maybe 30 tops. But so, either way, any way that you can stick it to Konami, good job.
Yeah. Did you hear about that story? We talked about this a couple weeks ago about the boy that was remaking PT, or the kid. He was like 17 or something like that. He was remaking PT in Unreal Engine 4, and it was really, really good. And then he got a phone call from Konami, and they said, sorry, you can't make this. And they shut him down. But we want to offer you an internship because you know what you're doing, and why don't you come work for us? So he took the offer and is working for Konami. I'm like, that's kind of cool that they did that. It sucks that they shut him down from doing a project. But at the same time, it's cool that they offered him a job. So they kind of redeemed himself a tiny little bit, but not really. So
here's the thing. I hope that they didn't hire him and be like, all right, you've got talent, kid. We know you were working on this project, but go debug that one game. Just jump in the corner for 50 times.
We need to fix this problem with these zombie heads and Metal Gear Survive not working right.
People aren't playing the game, but we really need you to fix those bugs for us if you can't get on that. All right. Thanks, champ. Thanks,
and then
champ.
He'd take his code and like remake Silent Hills with what he was building. I don't know.
I would not be surprised either crazy. Way.
Right. He should have just taken
They're quick.
Himself.
They're quickly adopting the EA model of business and just being the absolute worst.
Absolute worst. Yes.
He'll never leave that company now. Sorry. He's stuck for life. Yeah. They do that. They don't want you to leave. Suck your soul.
Sorry.
They suck your soul like the cursed sails.
Suck your souls.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so that's going to wrap it up for the news this week. If there's something we missed, we want to hear from you. Email us at hello@dnagamer.net and we will talk about it next week. Also, don't forget, if you like what you hear, please give us a rating and review on iTunes. Or actually, now it's Apple Podcasts. So go rate us on Apple Podcasts. Please.
Oh, that's right.
We really appreciate it.
If you do, you'll get something very special from us.
Oh.
Awesome. We'll kiss you.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Today's discussion topic is going to be one that Devin brought along to share with us, and I am going to let him explain it because he'll do a better job than I would.
Will he?
That's fair.
Yeah.
I explain most things better than you.
Said no one ever.
Said everyone ever. So our discussion topic today came from an observation I had when when we normally prepare these episodes, we try to think of things that we've either been playing or things we've noticed in the industry. Mine was really an observation that I had when the most recent games I've been playing are God of War and Octopath Traveler. So with that being the case, these are two franchises that are very well known. They've been around for a while. Not Octopath Traveler. Yeah.
That
development company has been around for a long time.
Yes.
And then God of War has been out since the PS2. So while both of these are very well known, either franchises or development companies, something that I noticed was that God of War 3, while a very good game, was something that was not exactly what I would call fantastic or outstanding. It was something that I was very ho-hum about.
Yeah.
A great game, not a fantastic, outrageous, perfect game. Not the ending that I thought it deserved. Well, then we move to a complete departure from what that series was, and we get this new God of War where we've completely abandoned the Greek pantheon. We are now moving on to the Norse pantheon. And we go from a different combat style completely, from the panned out camera as you watch Kratos fly through waves and waves and waves of enemies, to now this third person over the shoulder, very slower, methodic, calculated things happening with Kratos and his fight against enemies. And I was like, I was thinking this is different. This is something different that we've seen in the franchise. This is very cool. I like this. I love this. I'm loving this game. It's wonderful. I love the story. I love the characters. I love the mad, bad, sad, rad dad that has become Kratos. And then on that trail of thoughts that I was having with it, I went over to Octopath Traveler, which is a return to the old Square Enix, which at the time was Squaresoft, and Final Fantasy, and how it was all turn-based, and it was you have enemies on one side and the characters on the other, and it's not this new Final Fantasy stuff where it was all freeform and real-time and things happening and big flashy stuff on the screen. This one was very a return to the old formula. So I got to thinking about that, and it made me think of the question for game developers: should they be taking risks or going back to basics?
Yeah.
Interesting dichotomy.
Yeah. And I think also the addition to this question can even be, are these things that can coexist?
Right.
You know, in some capacity.
Right.
Because, you know, going back to basics can also be a risk if you are so far forward. Mm-hmm. And I think Octopath is a good example of that, because
absolutely,
they have been so far into real-time fighting combat style, mm-hmm. fast-paced action, all mm-hmm. that stuff, huge 3D graphics, epic visuals, and all this stuff. And then it's like, here's Octopath Traveler that is a pixel art game.
Yeah, high pixel art, slightly skewed view. Because I can't call it two-dimensional because it's not.
2.5D.
2.5D. All right. Yeah. I like that.
That works.
Is
like
it really? That. Okay.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
I don't know. I like the idea of like taking these two extremes, I guess you can call that, and like finding this middle ground, which is like you were saying, that line that they have to cross, but it's that line in the middle that like ties them all together. It's taking Octopath Traveler, putting that old spin on it with the new flair, mm-hmm. and it brings it back to like a place where more people are able to latch on to it.
Identify with it. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And then obviously God of War, great game, huge following. Mm-hmm. Now it could tell a deeper, darker. Yeah, it could. It is a darker story.
Yeah.
Well,
oh, yeah.
It's dark, but I don't know if it's darker than the other one.
There's more dark tones told in this story with Kratos.
So now a new audience can pick it up. It's easier to get into, but fans, well, I would say most fans probably can enjoy this just as much as the old games. I'm sure that's not everybody, obviously.
Well, and I you know, that, you know, going back between the two of them, and you know, you think about these developers and you talk about that line that we have to cross. Like, where is it? Is it a clearly visible line that we start toting when we're thinking about some of the games that we've been playing or the games that have been being made? And it's like, is the development team smart enough to know that it needs to start either taking risks or going back to basics? And will their publishers allow them to do so?
Yeah,
in a way, because if we think, I mean, we bash on them a lot, and I will continue to do so right now. EA will not. EA is vanilla, and they will remain vanilla. They do not want any other flavors other than vanilla. And if you tried to give them anything other than vanilla, they will say, no, that's not vanilla enough. Go vanilla that shit up right now.
I think it's vanilla with like little balls of Tabasco sauce. And you know, that's
a slight against vanilla, because I really like vanilla. I would say that they are the bran flakes. bran flakes.
Poor EA.
Insert bran flakes.
Insert bran flakes here.
Yeah. But if we want to dive into it a little bit here, I mean, let's look at these games. Let's just look at the two that I just mentioned right now. From a taking risks standpoint, we have God of War. God of War has always just been the hacky slashing, quick time events. You're going to beat up a bunch of enemies, and then when the big one comes on screen, you're going to do the quick time event to take that big bad enemy out and then move on to the next thing.
Right.
Yeah, there was some level up components. Yes, there was some things that you were like, okay, you can get these higher bits of health. You can upgrade your weapons a bit. You can use these new tools like the Golden Fleece for parrying and that kind of stuff. But it all pretty much stayed the same. And it was very good. God of War 1 and 2, still some of my favorite games of all time. Gosh, I'm trying to remember when God of War 1 came out.
March 22nd, 2005.
Good Lord. Okay. So, yeah. A long time ago.
Yes.
But,
yes, indeed.
But as you know, we get to God of War 2 and some ingenuity stuff happened, but we've got to God of War 3 and it was kind of getting stale with how it started to play.
Well, and also think of how much like gaming has changed since then. Like back then it was like a good game had a so-so story, but engaging combat that was just like really full of action. And then in the industry itself, you started seeing more open world and more exploration and more advanced combat mechanics and stuff. Like did Dark Souls come out before or after God of War 1?
After?
Okay. Yeah. So then you got Dark Souls, which, you know, like create a whole genre in itself.
Yep.
So it's like, well, how do you compete against that? You got to, at some point you have to pivot or else you get stuck in a rut where you are Call of Duty. That hasn't changed, but still makes millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But it's because they have built a fan base of people that this is what they play.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I think it's interesting you use that term pivot, because that is something that a lot of developers will do. If they're making a game series, then yeah, they've got to pivot. They've got to tweak some things. We've got to move around a little bit, shake things up, change the combat this way, tweak our enemies this way, make the story a little bit more about this thing, and as opposed to this thing that we were kind of moving towards. So it's pivoting is important, and, you know, kind of morphing and changing and evolving with your franchise is important, but sometimes it can be too much.
Yeah.
Be a lot. I mean, to be perfectly honest, it's why I haven't played a whole lot of the Assassin's Creed games. First one was, to me, was just boring as all hell, and I just could not get into it, and it was so repetitious with the same crap I was doing over and over.
It's like,
and
then I the formula that you follow for literally the next 2 hours.
Literally. And then the next two games that came out, I never got a chance to play them because I was so bored with the first. And then I saw all this new crap being thrown in there. I was like, this isn't even the same game anymore. Why? What happened?
There was an era in just gaming in general where just like shove as much as you can into this game.
Yeah.
I still like that. I still feel like that era is still there.
It's it is.
They're totally pushing that stuff.
But that has kind of changed to the loot box.
That's true.
Thing now.
A lot of that stuff come into play. I think Assassin's Creed did something with that, because they had that first game, like you said, was kind of garbage. Like, it was the story. I kept playing it because the story was so good. Mm. And they brought out the Ezio trilogy, and that was like really, really solid because the characters were compelling. The storyline was really, really engaging, and the whole Templar, you know, introduction with the future impact. Like, I hated what's the guy's name that you played as in the modern day?
Oh, what's his?
Connor? No.
Connor
was the lead character of Assassin's Creed 3.
Damn,
whatever his name was. He was very bland and boring. But like then they started like dropping that off and just focusing more so on the past. But then they were like, let's actually do something. Let's take a risk. And they didn't bring Desmond.
Oh, Desmond. That's right.
Desmond.
So they
fucking Desmond.
So they, they didn't bring out a game for 2 years, which for them is like unheard of.
Right.
And decided to like scrap that formula and like figure out how to like really change it up quite a bit, and gave their development team like 3 years to like make something new. And it still had a lot of the features of the first one, of the series, but like, it was larger world. Yeah. It was a completely different combat style. There was a progression system. There was combos that wasn't just like you being this guy that was, you know, just like hack and slash throughout like Arkham Asylum style. It was, you had to like actually plan out your attacks and stuff like that. And it worked out for them. I mean, that was a big risk that they took.
Yeah. But someone who wasn't going to play Assassin's Creed Odyssey, or not Odyssey. Origins.
I kept saying Odyssey.
I was like, wait,
it's Origins.
Odyssey,
that's what it was.
Yeah, like I was already done with, I was like, you know what? I'm done with this franchise. I'm sick of it. I don't want to play anymore, but I happened to get the code and I'm so happy I did, because it did. It just like changed everything. That they listened to the community, which is a big thing, which is kind of weird if you think about it, because studios listen to communities, but they don't always listen to the communities.
Right.
Like, we hear you. Well, we're not gonna do anything.
Well,
about
it's like, yeah, either they hear it and they try to do what they think we want, and then it's like,
we're gonna do what we think you want,
I think we understand what you're saying. I think we understand what you're saying.
Loot boxes, star cards, money.
Yeah. Oh, that's a
anyway.
That's
but yeah,
a
like
in its own right. But
I took a risk jumping into Origins, really pulled it off, like. Yeah. In a big way. Yeah, like, I know we kind of talk about how these giant open worlds are getting too big, but this, like, worked because it's a new land. Like, I don't know any other game where we've seen Egypt like this. Like, taking that risk to do that in such a big way. And, I mean, you could tell they funneled money into this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't miss a step going from the last game to Origins, you know? And, it paid off big for them, because now they're doing Odyssey, which is probably going to be the exact same thing. And they're adding on to it.
Yeah,
with like you can pick.
But in Greece,
there's dialogue choices, and you can pick two different characters. Like I think that's big, and that's a good way for them to go. I mean, that's a good risk.
That's a good risk, and it's a good morph and evolution that the game can take to be more accessible and be more enjoyable for its players.
Right.
Yeah. Another example of the back to basics idea was when Machine Games got picked up by Bethesda, and they got offered the ability to work on the Wolfenstein franchise. And hey, do you guys want to work on this game?
Yeah.
And they looked at how to approach that, and they're like, oh, hell yeah, we want to do this.
Hell yeah, we want to do that.
They built a very raw, simple, back to the basics shooter that was just like bonkers crazy. With the, I mean, it's just you walk in a room, you start shooting a bunch of Nazis, killing Nazis. And going crazy, and you had to pick up health packs. Like, who does that anymore? And like that was
health packs.
That was really, really interesting.
I thought I just have to wait behind the wall while the red goes away eventually.
Man, when Call of Duty introduced that, I was so mad. So mad.
Yeah.
I was like, this is some baloney.
I can be shot 50 times and yet somehow live.
Yep.
As long as I pace out my breathing between those shots. Oh, okay. All right. That gunshot went away. All right. Woo. All right. Let's get back into it, guys.
He needs oxygen.
You just got shot 6 times in the spine. I'm good, man. Walked it off.
I walked it off. Yeah.
My problem was I was running. Now I'm walking. Good.
Yeah. See, I'm good now.
Yeah. That was another good game. Like I thought nothing of it, and I jumped in it, and I was like, damn, like I never would have thought going back to those old mechanics would be so fun.
Yeah.
And it makes you remind you reminds you like how great that was.
Yeah.
And now that everything's changed so much, you know, it's good to see Wolfenstein still does that. Yeah. But now I mean, now it's a little jarring, I feel like, even at this point. To do the whole health pack stuff.
Right.
I guess not so much on PUBG, but you know, it's a different story.
Well, just games sticking with that kind of methodology of still keeping with their formulas. A lot of puzzle platformers or platformers in general all have health still in them. Owlboy, you've got Mega Man, Castlevania, any of these platformer kind of games, Mario, there's health involved, and you've got to maintain that. And games that have gone away from that, or when games depart from that, that's a huge friggin' risk involved. And I think that is a perfect example of a development company doing that. Not all shooters needed to take that risk and depart from getting away from health packs because it became just bananas and very unbelievable, and it just became more and more absurd, and now here we are.
Here we are.
With more Call of Duty. Boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground. And now they're going back to not boots on the ground with Call of Duty Black Ops 4.
And back in space. Mech suits, wall running.
Like for Call of Duty, though, they are kind of taking a risk in that they cut out single player.
I can hate that.
They eliminated single player and they're introducing freaking Battle Royale to their thing.
Oh, another Battle Royale game?
But it's called Blackout.
Shut the fuck up. Good
Lord. Blackout. It looks pretty sweet.
How much of this is our fault? Like gamers. Just think about
none of it.
I mean, because like I get what you're saying here.
We don't want things to get stale.
Correct. However,
like, but then they overshoot.
The thing. It's again, I don't know why I'm using food as an analogy, but here we are.
Overcooked is coming out.
Overcooked 2 is coming out. If we're trying something new, it doesn't mean that I want you to flood the market with it. With PUBG, it was like, oh man, Battle Royale, man, that's really fun. What a fun, unique way to do something. And then everybody now wants to get in on it. Now it's nothing but PUBG and Fortnite.
Yeah, when the commercial companies start getting involved, then you know it's run its course and it's getting stale.
I read that there is even Fortnite channels on every social media, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, and what the hell ever else, of just stuff that doesn't even really have, it's a third degree Fortnite reference. It's like, oh, here's today's Fortnite memes. Why? What happened?
Yeah, it's hard to sift through news now because of the fact that Fortnite's there all the time. And Fortnite is an example of a game that took a risk because they pivoted from Save the World, which is what that entire game was based around.
That wasn't just a pivot. That was a complete ankle breaking. Yeah.
They were going to be PvE, and that was like the whole idea. Yeah. 4-player co-op.
Build up your fortress. Fend off the zombies. You and all these people.
And they brought it out, and people were like, this is too confusing. It's complex.
Yeah, this is
bonkers.
There's a lot going on here.
It's like, okay, well, let's like put our development team and spend 2 months and make Battle Royale. And now when people think of Fortnite, like Save the World is not even what they think about. It's
no
Battle Royale. Like that's what Fortnite is
immediately associated with. Who's streaming it? What's the Battle Royale look like? Who's making money off of playing Fortnite right now? It's so commercialized. It's ridiculous. I feel so hipster saying commercialized with you.
But I mean, it is. It's become this
very,
great
very commercialized.
And
now people are doing the emotes in real life. That's like dances are being formed from like.
Well, we have gone beyond parodying ourselves. We are so far beyond that.
Yep. Yep.
Well, it's kind of funny because talking about where the line is, like, I feel like. The trends that people are following now, just take that line and just fuck it up. They just like they get it and they shake it and be like, fuck this line.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, we're going to go this way and then we're going to go this way. So like I feel like we're hopping this line constantly now with each iteration of these games that come out. And it's just like,
well, and
can you find like no one wants to find that balance. They just want to ride that wave. And obviously money's a big deal.
Well,
so it's just like
money's a big deal. But I think that's also it's like, do you fine tune or do you change the game completely?
Right.
Because that's a question you have to ask with. I mean, going back to Octopath Traveler, that's a complete change. Final Fantasies up to this point have now been all real time. It's highly engaging. There's high intensity. It's very realistic. You've got all these like very stylized characters with, of course, Final Fantasy hair, which means it points in 18 different directions. And it's some people's color hair color like changes in the sunlight and whatever else.
Yeah. What
the fuck? Yeah. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out. Yeah, but and I don't know what it was. I don't know what the catalyst was. But just thank God Square Enix was like, you know what? Stop. Pump the brakes. We need to remember where it was we came from. We need to remember what it was we were doing. And let's get back and make a game that these people remember that this is the reason why they love us. And it is. Octopath Traveler is a fucking masterpiece. Is it perfect? No. But damn close to my, opinion.
It makes sense to do it for this game. But I think any other game, it would be a huge risk to do that. Like God of War, huge risk.
Yeah.
It's easier to ride these trends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and beat them to death until, and then someone else comes out with a different trend and you follow that.
Well, and it's interesting you said that because that just kind of got me thinking about some of the other reasons why we now have this literal subgenre called Souls-like.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
How many Souls-like games do you know of right now?
Like all of them.
There's so many.
God of War.
Souls-like, Metroidvania style games.
Metroidvania
games, that's a huge thing.
Those are all, those have made a huge comeback for some reason.
And that's these things Souls. Like these developers are now coming out to do these. And I don't want to say that I'm against going with what's popular because that's kind of how some teams get popular. I mean, Rocksteady doing the first Batman Arkham Asylum, game changing. It's how we got the Shadows of Mordor now.
Create a trend
now, but it's a staple. But now I feel like we're getting a little oversaturated with this. How hard is this game where you die after two hits but you get flooded by enemies and you're playing Dark Souls with a two-dimensional black and white thing now.
Yeah.
So that's what you're playing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's just Dark Souls. It's all Dark Souls.
Let's talk for a second about games that should pivot, take a risk, or go back to the basics and look at what those can be. I'm going to start with the Telltale games.
Oh my God.
They badly need to go back to the basics.
No,
they need to take
a
risk.
You are stuck in the basics.
They need to figure out how to revitalize that formula.
I think Telltale's problem right now is that I feel like they're trying to stick too close to like, I don't know,
too many tales.
Can I hit him?
Yeah, go for it.
No.
Just put a black thing right here. While you hit him.
Anyway.
Telltale's gotten to this thing where it's like it's trying to be like we're a company that's telling stories. Okay, I get that. You can tell them in other ways. You can do it differently. You don't always have to sit there and give me the dialogue box of four choices. And then the time running out the bottom with the character staring at you blankly.
say something or say nothing.
So-and-so will remember that.
Yes.
Because they've got Walking Dead. They did Tales from the Borderlands. They did the
Guardians of the Galaxy,
Fables. They did
Batman.
So Game of Thrones.
Counting nine right now. They've gone through nine games. Probably more. I'm about to count right now.
Early on, they did Back to the Future,
and all of them are the same.
Oh, here we go. Holy shit! Okay.
Yep, it was pretty bad. I was not happy about that. And that's that. They should look at take a page out of a Quantic Dream's book and
okay, like 11 or 12
that formula
at the same like formula.
Yeah,
they've been doing probably a little more.
And you try
break out of that box, man. Yeah. Give me something different. Give me a different way that I can conduct dialogue with one of the characters that I'm engaging in. Give me something else besides I will walk around this room now and pick up these varying things that are highlighted that I can now interact with.
Well, if nothing else too, like prove to people that you are more than just a story that can churn out these things, or more than a studio that can churn out this same concept and formula. I mean, that's what the guys that did Killzone did. Like they went and made Horizon Zero Dawn, which is a complete 180.
That is a departure.
That's a huge departure.
What did you guys do before? FPSs? Don't do that anymore. Don't do your linear FPS anymore. We want you to do this open world adventure, third person bow hunting game.
Yeah, yeah.
Go on.
Okay.
Which is awesome. And it was a huge success. Nailed I was it. Like, okay, that's perfect. That's what you need to do. You know, EA, obviously every EA game, just insert name here. That's what you need to do.
Yes.
Like every year they bring out Madden and NFL or NHL.
Depart.
And NBA. And then they bring out Need for Speed. That
is EA. And they will never do anything to change that ever.
Yep.
As long as it brings in money, they're fine.
EA's a lost cause. Until they have something drastic happen to them, they're a lost cause. That's just nothing's going to change there. We're always going to get FIFA, Madden, NHL, whatever, the basketball, all of it. It's just going to be the same all the time, forever, until the end of eternity.
Oh, great.
That sucks.
Well.
Sad day. So any other franchises, games you can think of that like drastically need to do some kind of pivot, change? That like getting stale. It's just like, why is this still here? I mean, Call of Duty is
Mass Effect.
Oh, they're done now. They're done.
We got maybe Pokemon. That'd be interesting to see a new change. But I mean, I guess they've kind of made some changes over time. I don't really play a lot of
change
Pokemon.
And not be like, we've added 50 more.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. I agree.
All you did was add legs to a toaster. That's it. That's all you've done.
Chandelier can now
Toastimon.
Sure, it's not Digimon.
You should be hired.
I get an email. Do you want to come help us name some new Pokemon?
I think most of the games that I would want to be changed just need to like refine a few things, like Far Cry. I think they just need a better story.
Far Cry just needs that. They need a rehaul.
I think that comes from not the game, but that comes from the dev company,
right?
And Ubisoft, man, what kills me about it is they come up with great concepts, but they just don't want to take the risk to really deliver on it. And that's always going to be something that I feel about that company is good ideas, half-hearted executions.
You're there, but
you're so close. Ubisoft, you are so close to a blockbuster release. You really are. Just all these things that you've thought up. It's just you're so close. Just really give it something extra. Give it the extra attention that it deserves to like whether it's the gameplay or the story or like where the focus is. Just give it the attention that it needs.
And they do have 10 plus studios around the world, so surely they can make that happen.
I mean, did they all get drunk on like the big day that they're supposed to like create something amazing?
No. You know what's happening? They're too busy spending time developing the next year's dance number for E3. That's what's happening.
That is what's happening.
You gotta plan
this
shit
out. Guys, what are we
gonna
do next year? Let's spend this whole year.
That takes a year. That's a studio.
I think next year we should do the cha-cha slide.
Better get on that now.
Oh man. Yeah.
I am very pleased with my company of From Software, but I am even more pleased at the fact that they have been very open with their ideas of, like, we are going to be doing a return to form of some of our old IPs, as well as doing new IPs such as Shadows Die Twice, which is a Samurai Souls-like. So that's a Souls-like I can get behind, because they are the ones who make Souls games.
Yes.
Not surprised.
It's not really a Souls-like. It's a Souls game.
Okay, sure. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So
great, guys.
I think the moral of the story here is that I wish we could see more developers look at their legacy, mm-hmm. whatever it might be, mm-hmm. and not be afraid to pivot and change in some way to better their games. Because I mean, I understand it's hard, because like money, it's easy to make another thing that's exactly the same as a previous thing,
yeah.
knowing that it will can make money.
It's easy to make another title that's going to help you pay some bills. We get that.
But
totally get that.
You definitely need to make change at some point, because it's going to, I mean, like the gaming industry as a whole has a distaste for freaking Call of Duty and stuff like that, but it still sells a lot, because again, that's somebody out there that's all they ever play.
That's the only thing that people buy a PlayStation or an Xbox for. Yeah. That's the only thing they buy it for.
But you can tell the message is getting out there, because they're responding to those things finally. Like, they're starting to realize, like, hey, the boots on the ground messaging was there. Like, these developers are starting to see it a little bit, but they just need to see it more.
Yeah, I think...
Well, it's like, do you listen to your core base, who obviously just plays this one game all the time and loves everything about it? Or do you listen to a bigger audience? And I think sometimes that line is blurred too. It's like, oh, we'll listen to all these people but forget our core, or we'll listen to our core and forget everybody else.
Well, sometimes I'm always happy that a company is like, we know that we are not for everyone, and our goal has never been to, like, let's capture as many people as we can to play this one game. Bethesda's kind of been that way. But I think the important message to take away from something like this is, you know, if you are a development company and you have been in the game for quite a while and you've been putting out titles and titles and titles, that it's important to do. It's weird to say this. It's weird. You need to be able to do both of being cognizant of where you're at right now in your titles and your IP, and knowing when, as you say, you need to pivot, you need to evolve, you need to change things and freshen them up and liven them up to keep them enjoyable for everybody, but do not change so much and evolve so much that you forget where you came from and forget why it is that people came to this game in the first place, whether it was the story, the gameplay, whatever. Make sure you always remember where it is you came from and what your original message for that IP was.
Did you ever see the Bethesda Game Studios documentary by NoClip? It's really good. Check it out. It's pretty interesting. It's like, I do think Bethesda is one of the few companies that they could easily milk the hell out of like Fallout and Elder Scrolls and just call it a day.
Skyrim.
Yeah, I know. But the fact that they are still taking the risk to develop Starfield and like bring out a new IP.
That's one even better is, let's look at the best video game company in existence, CD Projekt Red.
Yes.
And
Cyberpunk. That is pretty sweet. Yeah.
Cyberpunk.
I'm ready. Let's do it together.
Oh man, I'm gonna play the shit out of Cyberpunk. So good. So basically, moral of the story is Cyberpunk. All right.
That's pretty. I hope you all enjoyed that. Cyberpunk. That's not. We're not even saying anything to qualify what we're just saying. Cyberpunk.
Just Cyberpunk.
All right,
so
end this thing.
If y'all have any feedback, comments, thoughts on games that you think should be pivoted in some form or fashion, you know, things that examples you have of either those that have taken risks that we didn't mention here, or those that have gone back to the basics and have been successful with it, let us know in the comments. We'd love to hear some more input from everybody. And that's going to conclude our discussion topic this week. If there is a topic you want to hear us talk about, please let us know at hello@theinnergamer.net. Don't forget to check out our video clips of this segment every Thursday at youtube.com/theinnergamer. Also, if you donate $3 or more a month to Patreon, you can see the full video of this discussion topic each and every week. So go over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. We have four titles coming out next week. It's kind of scary, actually. On what month are we in now? August 10th. We have We Happy Few for PS4,
bring it back, Brett.
Xbox,
bring it
back. And PC. From the studio that brought you Contrast, which I did not realize. We Happy Few is an action-adventure game set in a drug-fueled, retro-futuristic city in an alternative 1960s England. Hide, fight, and conform your way out of this delusional, joy-obsessed world. Then, on the 14th, we have three games. We have Death's Gambit on PS4 and PC. This is a challenging 2D action platformer with deep RPG elements. As an agent of death bound to a service, unravel the mystery of Cyrodiil and discover the true price of mortality. And then, from Telltale Games, we have The Walking Dead, the final season on PC, PS4, and Xbox. This is Clementine's final season in the Telltale series.
Bringing it all, to a close.
Bringing it all down.
She dies.
You son of a bitch.
I have no idea.
Shit, it's Walking Dead.
I have no idea.
Kinda,
yeah, she is the one.
Everybody
dead.
Dies.
She's the catalyst that like made everybody become zombies. She's the virus, actually.
Oh. She's the virus.
Well, yeah, she's got to die then.
And last but not least, we have the next expansion from the long-lasting World of Warcraft MMO, Battle for Azeroth. This is on, obviously, PC. This is just... This is still happening. There's still
it hasn't
still
ended.
There is still shit happening in Azeroth.
Yes. And this is one that's... it's an intense battle.
Here's my question.
Yes.
Why?
Why Azeroth?
Why is shit still happening in Azeroth?
Oh, I don't know.
Millions of dollars.
Haven't we done enough? When's the next expansion? Lawn care in Azeroth. I feel like we're running out of ideas at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see like space travel in Azeroth. Like they should have a tear in the sky.
We already did space travel with the whole, with the whatever they were. From the Burning Crusade.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
Maybe this will be the last expansion, and then they'll announce StarCraft, World of StarCraft, Universe of StarCraft.
I would play the shit out of that.
I know you would.
I would totally play the shit out of that. That'd be awesome. And then last but not least, we did not announce this last week because they hadn't announced it yet, but PlayStation's got two games coming out for free in the month of August. You're going to get Mafia 3 and the 4-versus-1 horror game Dead by Daylight, which was the pre-starter to lead into Friday the 13th that became kind of the thing that everybody played, but Dead by Daylight still has like a huge following of people that play it, and you kill people and do crazy things in Dead by Daylight. So
well, that's just delightful.
There we go. There you have it. And that's going to wrap up our show this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or tell a friend or many friends.
Yes, tell all the friends.
All the friends.
All of them.
Devin, tell your friends.
Not even just a few of your friends.
Just most of them.
Just most of them.
Most of all of them. We also have a Patreon set up, which is a way for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order to bring you all the great content you want to see and hear every week, even $1 a month, to help us keep this content coming at you every week. Plus, if you support us, we got some awesome rewards waiting for you, such as being a guest on the podcast or getting some exclusive content. So head on over to thenergamer.net and click donate to contribute. I'm Austin Morales.
I'm Brayden Oski.
Hey, I'm Devin Dury.
Hey! So
you guys missed me, you know it.
Oh, we totally did.
We'll see you next time.
Oh, I forgot about that. Big time.
Well, cue that music.
Yes, I can turn it on and off.
I can turn it on and off, which I guess is kind of what cueing is, I guess. I'm sure you can.
I'm sure you can.
Are we talking about video games yet?
Yeah, we're waiting on Austin to get back. I don't know where he went to. Dean went to grab. Oh, he went to steal one of my Topo Chicos.
So good.
Nostalgia. For all those who've been like listening to this podcast since forever.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're just, you're gushing with just,
God, I hope so.
I don't know.
I hope people aren't rolling their eyes like, oh God, get him the fuck off already.
I thought he'd never come back.
Yeah.